Martha Stewart here. As a devoted pet parent and culinary expert, I ensure my cats and dogs are fed the finest nutrition. My premium pet food features air-dried protein inclusion, whole fruits and vegetables, and never any fillers. Martha Stewart pet food formulas make it so easy to satisfy the dietary needs and taste preferences of your pets. Now all six delicious formulas are 50% off. And there's convenient home delivery on Chewy.com. No more lugging heavy bags, and your pets will thrive on the optimal nutrition and great taste.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. And this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
You know, I don't think you can be a good designer unless you really care about people and how they live.
From a very young age, Michael Kors knew exactly what he was meant to do, fashion. At the age of 5, his mother allowed him to redesign her wedding dress when she got remarried. At the age of 11, Michael opened a boutique in his mother's basement. Known for his classic but modern design, some of the biggest names in Hollywood and even former First Lady Michelle Obama have worn Michael's clothing. Throughout his career, Michael has been a fierce advocate for feeding those suffering from hunger. Michael launched his first fashion line in 1981 at the age of 21. In 2011, when his company went public, it was the biggest U.S. fashion IPO business in history. And just last year, Michael celebrated his 40th year in business, a true milestone. Michael, it is very great to see you, and welcome to my podcast.
I'm thrilled to be here. Always great to see you.
It is so fun. And I mean, we saw each other last night, too,
exactly.
At the CFDA Awards.
I feel like we're dating.
Oh, wow.
We're dating. I like that.
Wow. Well, you grew up surrounded by fashion. How did your family nurture your interests?
Funny enough, I think, you know, I'm an only child. And I grew up...
A spoiled only child.
Indulged. Let's say indulged. Okay. Let's not say spoiled. Let's go with indulged. But no, I think when I was young, they kind of brought me along on the adult conversations. And so many people in my family were connected to fashion. My mom was modeling. My grandfather was in the textile business. I had an uncle who was a manufacturer. So it was sort of this, I don't know, it was conversation at the table, you know, and they talked endlessly about why was this good and that wasn't good. And
so you had quality. A really good introduction to fashion and an education right at home.
Early, right at home.
Which is so lovely. Well, you redesigned your mom's dress when you were 5 years old. What did it look like?
Well, it's interesting. My mom, the first marriage, she did not have a big wedding. And then the second wedding was coming along, and I think my grandmother wanted a big wedding.
Uh-huh.
And so my mom's dress, you know, was the 60s. So it was, the silhouette was ampire and very streamlined, but the dress was covered with zillions of bows. It had bows, 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 and more bows.
I bet that was pretty.
It was a bit
overdone.
Yeah, a little overdone. And I think what happened, I think that she was on her final fitting, and it was myself and my grandmother and my mom. She tried the dress on, and my grandmother said, "It's perfect." My mom looked in the mirror, and she looked at me, and I said, And she said, why are you making a face? And I said, "Too many bows." So the next thing you knew, the tailor came in. They started snipping off the bows, and we ended up with one bow.
How great. And you made up your mind that that's what had to be.
I knew when I looked at it, it needed an edit.
Well, at 11, you opened your first boutique in your home. What did you sell in that boutique?
Well, first off, the name of the boutique was everything. It was called the Inagata De Vida.
Inagata
De Vida, which was this rock and roll song at the time. And I think I wanted it to be very sort of Woodstock hippie. And I was very crafty. Of course, I'm sitting here talking to you about this. So I had candles that I had made, leather craft that I had done, copper bracelets. I had a girl who was crocheting snoods. We had all of these things, and I said to my mom, I said, "I'm just doing this." She said, "As long as they don't come through the house and they just go to the basement, great." And we sold everything in like 2 days.
I bet.
It was a big success.
I bet. People love the handcrafted, the original.
And the one of a kind.
And the one of a
the
kind.
The one of a kind, yeah. Was really, and I learned that at that age.
Well, how did the boutique influence the beginning of the Michael Kors brand? I mean, you learned it, you must have learned it right there. You got the bug.
I think, you know, for me, it's always going to be the sort of, I say it's the magic of the tissue rustling. It's the magic of when you put the right thing on and you look in the mirror. And at that age, I had already seen my mom and my grandmother and all of my aunts. I had this like cast of characters, all these women who I saw the power of fashion and the power of shopping.
Well, what did you like? What got you about fashion? I mean, was it making pretty things? Was it style? What was it?
You know, in my whole life, this is terrible to say, I've always kind of done this sort of makeover show in my mind. With strangers, with everyone, I look and I'm like, maybe if she just shortened that skirt a little, maybe if the hair was this, maybe. So I think I'm always thinking about how do you kind of take what someone is about and make them a better version of themselves.
That's nice.
You know, I never loved this sort of weird Cinderella, you know, total.
From rags to beauty.
I think it's just be yourself, but be better.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right about that. I mean, I have so many friends who I know I could restyle. I mean, I should restyle myself, too.
Yes. I should restyle myself because, I mean, I'm boring. I mean, everyone's like.
Michael Kors has stayed looking the same ever since I met him. He wears these dark aviator glasses. He wears navy blue or black, right today it's cashmere, crew neck sweaters.
That's it. T-shirts and crew neck.
Jeans and black sneakers and a big, heavy gold Rolex.
And I'm good. I can go anywhere.
Yeah, you can.
I can go anywhere.
You can go
anywhere.
That
works for me.
Yeah. But it's funny. I mean, oftentimes the designer is the least designed of the people he dresses.
Well, I have to.
Or she dresses.
I have to say, though, when I was young, I mean, growing up, I mean, as a kid, as a teenager, I was trendy.
Oh, you were?
I wore it all.
What was your favorite outfit?
Oh, God, I think probably the craziest thing. At Studio 54, I wore harem pants with a huge belt on my hips, boots, leg warmers, and big Porsche sunglasses.
Boy, oh, boy.
I was 18 years old.
What did you wear as a shirt?
Oh, I think I had a linen wrap shirt that had no buttons. I weighed probably 130 pounds then, so I thought that was pretty good.
You looked pretty cool.
Yeah.
I only went to Studio 54, I think, twice in my life. I missed the whole
life-changing
thing.
Life-changing.
But I missed it. I missed it.
Oh, it was.
I mean, I remember the little scenarios I saw as I was walking. I went that night where they had the walls of ice.
Uh-huh.
What was that celebrating that night?
I remember what those parties. There were so many amazing
crazy
parties.
Crazy. And there was smoking going on upstairs and snorting. And it was a wild
Do you know
place.
That I went the first time I went? Do you know why I went?
Why?
Instead of going to my high school prom, we went to Studio 54.
Oh, you did. Well, that was fun.
It was truly.
High school proms are really
Why
yucky.
Do I want to go to the prom? It was right. Like going to Oz. Isn't it better? You know, why not?
So you dressed cool. Yes. You dress trendy.
And then I think when I went into business, I was just, I realized that I was, first off, super busy and traveling like crazy. And I was spending all my time thinking about what everyone else should wear. So I just wanted to simplify the process for myself. But I think back in the 80s, I wore a button-down shirt every day with a blazer and aviators.
So you did. Oh, my
gosh. I had like a 15-year run of that, and then I switched.
Well, what designers did you follow when you were growing up and developing your own personal style?
Well, I think, you know, coming of age, the American designers were, of course, a big influence, whether it was Halston, Norell, Stephen Burroughs. But then Saint Laurent was just, you know, I mean, truly changed how everyone looked. So for me, I remember there was a W magazine cover that said plain and fancy, and they had Saint Laurent and Halston. And I thought the two of them just summed it all up.
Oh, and indeed they did at that time.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, that's quite a duo. And
I mean, really potent.
They led the way for you and other people of your generation to become the greatest designers for Americans.
Well, and now, of course, I think, you know, what we perceived of as American, the world really lives with sportswear and with the idea of comfort and, mm-hmm. and it's fast and mobile. And, you know, we used to have the fantasy that people in Paris were very formal. And well, now, of course, walk around Paris and, you know, people are casual and on the go.
And I hope a lot of you get to go to Paris now that travel restrictions are lifted and traveling is becoming more popular. I just heard that American Express is doing much, much better because of travel.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Isn't that nice? Well, at what age did you go to FIT, Fashion Institute of Technology?
I moved into Manhattan when I was, we're suburban kids, two of us.
Where'd you grow up?
Which Long town? Island.
In Long Island?
Long Island, yep. And I moved in when I was 18. I went to the Fashion Institute. And, you know, immediately I was surrounded by people who were as obsessed with fashion as I was, which was incredible.
And did you study drawing or actual cutting?
I signed up for fashion design. I was the worst sewer in the world, but a very proficient sketcher. So I was very, very unbalanced as a student. I didn't stay in school that long because I started working.
I see. You worked for a boutique or?
Yeah, I worked for a store right off Fifth Avenue and 57th Street, across from Bergdorf Goodman, called Lothar's. And it was a French company. They were sort of this tie-dyed, Saint-Tropez, Brigitte Bardot on the back of a Vespa kind of look. And I started working there as a salesperson in school. And then the next thing I knew, I was offered the opportunity to design product for the store. I was 19.
How great.
And, you know, we had unbelievable customers, Martha. I learned everything from the people who shopped in the store. And I think we were kind of the gap for the uber rich.
But you did all that high style.
Yeah. It was amazing.
What would you consider? I mean, you've always been working. I like that about you.
My whole life.
Yeah, we like that. We like energetic and hardworking and entrepreneurial people.
This is the two of us, for sure.
What would you consider your first big break in the fashion world?
Well, I think certainly for me to launch my collection at Bergdorf Goodman, see the windows go in on Fifth Avenue.
What year was that?
1981.
Oh, wow.
You know, I was...
It seems like yesterday.
For me, I can't decide if it feels... Partially, it feels like yesterday, and part-time, I think to myself, that's eons ago.
I know, but it's eons in certain respects, but really, I mean, Microsoft hadn't even started yet.
No, of course, no.
I mean, the world, Google hadn't started yet, can you imagine?
The windows at Bergdorf's, being at Bergdorf's. In fact, the first thing that was written about me was written by Anna Wintour. Anna Wintour was working at New York Magazine, and she picked me as her fall fashion pick.
Oh, wow. What a lucky break. So you're still close friends.
Still close friends. Bergdorf's and Anna. It was a good way to start.
Martha Stewart here. As a devoted pet parent and culinary expert, I ensure my cats and dogs are fed the finest nutrition. My premium pet food features air-dried protein inclusion, whole fruits and vegetables, and never any fillers. Martha Stewart pet food formulas make it so easy to satisfy the dietary needs and taste preferences of your pets. Now all six delicious formulas are 50% off. And there's convenient home delivery on Chewy.com. No more lugging heavy bags, and your pets will thrive on the optimal nutrition and great taste.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're talking tea, we're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Here are some examples of what you'll hear from us on Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
This is where we discuss all things reality TV, all things popular culture.
And a little bit of Rappaport's reality, the reality of us.
We're figuring out. And if we had been recording these last 4 or 5 days, it would have been,
the
podcast would have taken a left turn.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Well, you launched your first fashion line at the age of 21. Looking back, what advice would you give that young man today? What did you do? Did you do anything wrong, or do you think everything was just hunky-dory?
Well, I think because we weren't dealing with social media and we didn't have the sort of rapid kind of crush and rush that we have today. But I was always in a rush. I was always, you know, a little impatient.
And you knew how to promote.
Oh, I knew how to get out there.
And that's what I think Michael and I have in common. We knew instinctively how to promote our good ideas.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I was impatient. You know, I couldn't understand 3 years in why I wasn't a household name. You know, I mean,
only three.
Yeah, why? Yeah, exactly. Two, maybe, Martha. You know, but funny enough, I waited for 3 years to have an actual fashion show.
So what was in that first fashion show? Can you remember all the different styles?
Of course.
Like what?
Well, the coolest thing in that first fashion show, Iman.
Is she your model?
She was in the show. And we are still close friends all these years later. And she wore this beautiful chocolate brown leather pullover, gray cashmere flannel trousers, and this gorgeous black silk shirt.
Sounds perfect for today.
And you'd absolutely put it on today. And the funny thing is, when I opened my first store on Madison Avenue, you were at the store opening wearing a leather shirt.
Oh.
You had a leather shirt on.
With a lot of pearls.
Yes.
Oh, I
exactly.
remember. And you told me, you commented on my pearls.
You liked them. I loved the leather and the pearls.
Yeah.
And I think so much of what I showed in that first show maybe with a change in shoulder pads. Because back in the 80s, we had those enormous pads.
Oh, you know, I sort of liked shoulder pads, even though I have big shoulders. I liked them.
I liked them until they get, you know, half.
And they got too big.
Yeah, you look a halfback. It's not too great.
But in 1998, the movies found you. You designed the Thomas Crown Affair clothing for Rene Russo, who is, like, she was one of my idols. She was so beautiful in that movie, like, real hot stuff. What did you design for her?
Well, what was interesting, when I was growing up, one of my favorite fashion movies was The Thomas Crown Affair. The original was Steve McQueen and Faye Dunaway, and the clothes and the sets and the everything, all the locations were amazing. And I knew Renee, and she had never done a film where the character was meant to be glamorous. And she called and she said, I'm doing The Thomas Crown Affair. And she said, and we've got to look sophisticated, sleek, sexy, glamorous all at once. So between Michael Kors and at the time I was designing Celine in Paris, so she...
Oh, yeah, I forgot that.
Yeah.
You were doing Celine.
So we were doing both.
Oh, and some of my favorite clothes.
Yeah, I mean, they were really beautiful, timeless, luxurious pieces. And Renee ended up, I would say probably about 85% of the wardrobe in the film was from, you know, between Michael Kors and Celine. And after the movie opened, I think it was really the first movie where you saw adults being sexy. And women cut
Who was
their
the
hair.
Male lead?
It was Pierce Brosnan.
That's right, Pierce Brosnan.
It was Pierce.
That's right.
I mean, they were quite a remarkable couple.
Yeah. Well, over the years, you have certainly had the opportunity to dress many celebrities. It's hard to ask you who stands out, but you must have some favorites.
Well, I have to say the most fun moment always for me is the Met Ball, because it's not the typical red carpet. You know, you can break all the rules. So we've, you know, we've done everyone from Gigi Hadid to J-Lo, from Regina King to Kerry Washington, and you always can kind of really bring out the drama, but still be true to yourself as a designer.
But it's gotten wilder.
Oh, well, the first time I went years ago, and I think, you know, people wore a simple dress and off you went.
Yeah, I went two or three times early on, and it was, like, very staid.
Yeah.
And then it started to get wilder, and then it started to get really expensive. Remember?
And then
Anna Wintour clamped down on who came and who didn't come.
And then the clothes, though, got really amped up. It was fun, I have to say. The Gigi Hadid, the theme that year was camp. And so Bette Midler came, and of course, Bette said to me, she said, if you want to talk about camp, let's go for it. But with both of them that year, that theme really allowed, I think, myself and all of the designers to just really have fun.
But you like Halloween, too. Didn't you do Halloween?
Oh, I love Halloween.
With Bette Midler, every year, listeners, has a Halloween party called Hulloween. And you used to judge.
I still do.
Oh, you still are.
I still do. Oh, it's a riot.
I won for my surfboard outfit one year. I went as a surfer.
Well, it's Halloween.
I know. And I a surfer girl, and I wore a very hot surfer suit, a full suit, body suit.
Oh, God.
And I was dragging a 12-foot surfboard with me, and no taxi would pick me up. And it was I had to walk like 30 blocks to the Waldorf Astoria.
In your surf look.
In my surf look. And I was dripping wet when I got there. But it's always such a fun evening.
And also the organization, New York Restoration Project.
That's the organization that Beth started that plants trees throughout the five boroughs.
Yeah, and gardens. Incredible gardens. Community gardens.
Amazing.
Greening New York.
And then you're designing all these incredible clothes. I remember I was looking in my closet. I have a closet in the attic where I keep all my old clothes and looking for my Michael Kors clothing. Clothing changed not too much. From the broad shoulders and the suits, then we got into more dresses, then we got into more pants. And then more sportswear. Mm-hmm. But then you joined a show, a very popular show on TV called Project Runway. And that was in 2000, I think, in 04?
04.
04. Now, do you think TV really made a big difference in your career?
Well, I think the funny thing now, in retrospect, at the time when I first did the show, I when I heard reality television, all I knew was Survivor. I thought, oh, the designers are going to have to eat bugs or worms or, you know. But then what we saw, that what I thought was so interesting and people fell in love with, was they saw the alchemy of, you start with nothing, an idea, and suddenly you have something. And as far as me and how people reacted to Michael Kors, I think they got to know me.
Yeah, they did.
I think they really had this sort of personal
connection.
And they
loved your advice to the contestants, because really that really shows that you're a good teacher, in addition to being a fantastic designer. Being able to teach that craft is hard.
And they also got to see my humor.
Yes.
Yes, I certainly could, you know, have a zinger in there. And so I think it's funny. I think what's wonderful about something like Project Runway, it lets people know how much hard work goes into all of the things that we wear and we love to wear.
What is today's trend? Is there a trend? I mean, fashion is always, they're always talking about fashion trends.
Well, we ride a roller coaster. You know, we really do. We ride this roller coaster. So, of course, you know, during the height of the pandemic, you know, my gosh, people were just like, you know, in the house, on Zoom, and everyone was in shower slides and sweatpants and track pants. And then suddenly the burst of, oh, I'm going back to work. Mm-hmm. I'm going to a party.
I can now wear a pair of shoes.
I can wear real shoes, not just shower slides. We definitely, I think we're certainly seeing people want to get dressed up, whether it's even just to have lunch with a friend or go back to the office. But the thing that I think is interesting to see is a new younger generation loving beautiful tailored clothes again. An impeccable coat, an impeccable jacket. Because for a long time, we had this idea of disposable fast fashion, which to me is just the worst thing you can do if you're trying to think sustainably.
I had a tag sale recently, and I had gone through my clothes, and with a TV career, you do collect a lot of clothing because mm-hmm. you have to look different every day.
Sure.
And I don't like having too many clothes because I don't like to waste. But I put all of my very good things in a couple tubs, beautiful silk shirts, Italian, French, American, and all my designer kind of clothing, the Michael Kors and the Ralphs and the other things in other tubs. And I put those in a house. I did not want to sell those at my tag sale. I put a lot of the more disposable stuff in other tubs. Well, somehow the tubs all got mixed up.
Oh, gosh.
But I tell you, guess what went first? All the really beautiful designer clothing. My assistants who work for me, people who work in the company.
Everyone.
Either I see them now wearing these gorgeous, gorgeous.
And isn't it wonderful to see?
It is. They look so good in it.
Well, and also, you know? It's you know, you see the difference of something that's beautifully made, that's tailored properly.
But I think people instinctively know when it's beautifully made, too.
Oh, yeah.
And they want it, but they can't afford it sometimes.
Well, now, of course, what you did, of course, to be able to regenerate things that might be in your closet and regenerate and find something new and move on and recirculate, it's the greatest thing.
So you would characterize today's perfect outfit as more tailored?
I think it's just the addition of the tailored piece. I don't know if it's going to be the 80s back to head-to-toe tailoring, because we've had the comfort thing. So I think now it's maybe this blend, this hybrid, that you wear an impeccably tailored jacket, maybe over the casual things you have in your closet, or instead of putting on a down jacket, put on a remarkable coat.
So when did you go public? What year was that when you...
Everything happened. Everything happened. Let's see. Public was 2011.
Now, this is after your fashion is everywhere. Did you already have your own stores?
We had opened many stores at that point, and we started expanding around the world.
And you had handbags.
We had bags. We had footwear.
Shoes, yes.
Eyeglasses, fragrances, women's and men's clothing. And we really, though, I have to say, Martha, we started seeing that this sort of idea that, oh, it's American fashion, that kind of all the borders disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw that suddenly, you know, someone in Jakarta fell in love with the same piece as someone in Chicago. So that was really the light bulb went
off. Did you go public before Ralph Lauren went public?
No, it was after. It was after. Yeah. It was
and Donna
after.
Karen?
Donna, at that point, Donna Karen was probably with LVMH, but she had gone public.
Before, yes, she
before,
did.
Before, and then she went private.
Yeah. Who do you consider all your contemporaries?
Well,
in
it's funny. We kind of like, you know, it's funny. When I was at Celine, my first season at Celine was Marc Jacobs' first season at Louis Vuitton.
Oh, wow.
We went the same season and we've kind of grown up together. And then, you know, Tom Ford and I are sort of, again, the same thing, the Americans who were in Europe. So you see that. And
I don't know if I have any Michael Kors Celine. But I do have Tom Ford tuxedos from
the original Gucci.
I do. I loved those so much.
I'm trying to
get thin enough to wear those now.
The famous red velvet one.
Oh, I know. I don't have the red velvet.
Have the red
no,
velvet
I have
one?
The black velvet with the satin lapels.
Gorgeous.
It's such great clothing.
What's funny, you asked before about why do designers, why would we wear a uniform? We were in Italy last summer. And I ran into Stefano Gabbana, and the two of us had literally the exact same glasses, T-shirt, jeans, everything. I said, we both got the memo, right?
Oh, gosh.
You know?
Yeah.
And I guess most of us, you know, most of us try to find a way to make it easier.
Your uniform.
Exactly.
Your uniform. So if somebody comes to visit you now, what would you be impressed by? And someone looking for a job with Michael Kors as a designer, what would impress you?
Well, I think first of course, their talent, but also an understanding and an empathy for people. You know, I don't think you can be a good designer unless you really care about people and how they live. So when I'm talking to someone who's going to join us, I want to hear, you know, what kind of person do you imagine? Who are you thinking about? Because if someone just says, oh, an imaginary person, well, somehow to me that doesn't make sense.
In 2021, which was just last year, you celebrated your 40th anniversary in business. Mm. I celebrated my 30th in magazine world. Isn't that weird?
30 and 40, yeah. The both of us. So yeah.
I started my magazine 30 years before, and so, you started yours.
And I did my
40 years
40.
Before.
Yes, 40 was quite a number.
How did you celebrate?
Well, of course, we were at the height of the pandemic,
right.
So we could not have a party. We could not even have a live fashion show. And I have always been a huge theater fan, and I always had this fantasy: wouldn't it be amazing to have a fashion show in the theater district in Times Square?
Oh, how great.
But of course, normally you could never do that. And I was heartbroken to see the theater shut down and to see not just the actors, but just all the talent, you know? So we decided that we were going to film a fashion show on the streets of Times Square and with this huge range of models. I mean, Naomi Campbell closed the show. She's the only model who's been in a Michael Kors show in every decade of my career.
Wow, how great.
So it was wonderful, and Helena Christensen, and people who've been such a part of my career. And then also we were also giving back to the Actors Fund, because just what was going on.
Oh,
was
helping
just
support the poor actors who were out of work.
Everyone
for so
out of
long.
Work. All the people who worked in the theaters. So for me to see the theater come back to life.
But you're a big theater goer.
Oh. I mean, we also like to get involved in producing theater. I think there's just something about live performance. We did Network, and we did the Lehman Trilogy, and both
That's
of them.
That's amazing. Oh.
They were both, we were involved with both. And, you know, storytelling live is just, it's magic.
Yeah. Did you ever act?
When I went to acting school.
Oh, you did?
I went to acting school.
Ah.
I did. I went to acting school.
Before FIT?
When I was a young teenager. And I modeled when I was little, when my mom was modeling, and then she retired me. And then the acting thing was just, I realized I'd rather be in the audience.
Well, who are your mentors? As designers, who are your favorite designers?
I mean, for me, I always will have to go back to the designers who changed the way people live on a regular basis. So I go back to Saint Laurent. I go to Halston. I go to Chanel. She changed the way women look and live. Claire McCardell, remarkable. Stephen Burrows, who could move and dance all night long. All of those designers. Azzedine Alaia, when you think about the clothes he made back in the 80s.
Gosh, those bodies. You have to have those bodies.
No, but he, you know what's interesting? I mean, he really, when you think about it, he really changed the fact that you could put something on and it was stretchy and you
could move. Oh, no, I had some really good
Azzedine Alaia. They were hot, those clothes. And they still are.
They stand the test of time. My daughter loved Azzedine.
Yes, they're amazing.
Martha Stewart here. As a devoted pet parent and culinary expert, I ensure my cats and dogs are fed the finest nutrition. My premium pet food features air-dried protein inclusion, whole fruits and vegetables, and never any fillers. Martha Stewart pet food formulas make it so easy to satisfy the dietary needs and taste preferences of your pets. Now all six delicious formulas are 50% off. And there's convenient home delivery on Chewy.com. No more lugging heavy bags, and your pets will thrive on the optimal nutrition and great taste.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're talking tea, we're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Here are some examples of what you'll hear from us on Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
This is where we discuss all things reality TV, all things popular culture.
And a little bit of Rappaport's reality, the reality of us.
We're figuring out. And if we had been recording these last 4 or 5 days, it would have been,
juicy.
Would have taken a left turn.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
So what is the term American sportswear? Because you are like the king of American sportswear, in my mind, mm-hmm. and I think in many other people's minds. What does it mean to you?
You know, it's funny. When we hear the word sportswear, a lot of people say, you mean track pants?
No.
Do you mean a hoodie? That's part of it. That is part of it. I think inherently, listen, I make evening gowns. I make cocktail dresses. We make tailored suits. American sportswear, inherently, even if it's a gown, it has some sense of easiness to it, a sense of movement and comfort. And also, I think we are pragmatic as Americans. So I think that normally there's got to be a versatility to it. I think that the French are much more indulgent than we are. And I think that Americans do have this practicality. So I have always thought that American sportswear is rooted in comfort, mobility, versatility, and that can apply to everything from track pants to a gown. Like, why not be comfortable in a gown? You know, I don't understand the idea that you should be sort of, you know, trussed up.
And corseted. Ugh,
it's just, you know, unless you're going to a Halloween party.
And pushed down.
Maybe at a Halloween party, push it up, push it
well,
down.
Well, talk about last night. Okay, last night was the Council of Fashion Designer Awards in that Casa Cipriani on the East River. Mm-hmm. And Michael was there. I was there. People, I mean, there were rappers there. Drake was there. But it was a crazy crowd, and all the Jenners and Kardashians, and amazing, amazing group of people. So, what table were you at?
Well, we were at our own table.
Oh, you had your own table.
We had our own table, but our table was lots of fun.
Who was at your table?
Amanda Seyfried was with me, and because she's just to me so talented, stylish, beautiful. And then
she looked beautiful.
She looked great. She wore a pair of trousers and a bodysuit. She said to me, "She said I'm actually comfortable." Mm-hmm. And then we also, I love seeing the models that we work with off the runway and in real life. So beautiful Chinese model named He Kong and a gorgeous.
Who was in the gold kind of jumpsuit.
The gold hooded.
I have to get that. Where do I go for that?
That was custom.
Oh, no.
One off. she's actually a remarkable model. Her name is Ugbad, and She is Somali, but grew up in Iowa.
Oh.
And isn't that the American dream?
Boy.
You know, that to me is...
Slender, very tall, very, very thin, that long neck. She was so beautiful in that outfit.
She could
sell thousands of those outfits
amazing.
For you.
But you know what was so cool
about...
Please
make that for the stores.
We have to make that.
Yes. What's it made out of?
It was all hand-embroidered metal paillettes on silk chiffon. Beautiful.
Oh, okay.
But you know what's interesting? Last night, I'm sure you thought the same thing. How eclectic was the mix of people at that event? And isn't that the best of America?
Well, I'm sitting next to Lenny Kravitz. I'm sitting with Drake. And they're all hugging and kissing each other. It was a really interesting
night.
Wasn't
it?
It was.
You know?
It was so interesting. Cher was at my table.
I mean,
the legend of legends.
Speaking of eclectic, right? You go from Lenny to Cher.
Not so odd, though, because Cher and Lenny were both dressed in a lot of black leather. And chrome hearts.
It works.
Yes,
it works.
Yes.
It works.
Oh, my gosh. It was such a... I felt like sort of a fish out of water, but it was so much fun. But it was an incredible night in celebration for... You know, there had been a hiatus because of COVID.
Yeah, exactly.
And here's fashion back
and
again.
And it's the 60th anniversary for the CFDA.
Yeah.
And really just promoting American talent around the world.
Yeah, and it's a wonderful, wonderful event and a wonderful group of people who are really care about fashion.
Absolutely.
And now what do you think about the high end of fashion? I mean, you do a lot of that too, but you do a lot of, I wouldn't say moderately priced, I would say...
Democratic. We like to say democratically priced.
Michael does democratically priced fashion. But so what do you think about the high end? They seem to have survived the pandemic better than anybody. Is that true?
I think what people realize, you know, it's all relative. Price tags are relative to who you are and your bank account and how you live. I think people in general, though, are realizing I want the best I can afford that works for my life. And I think that we went through before the pandemic... I think it was just more.
You said of the disposable.
The disposability. Yeah. And then suddenly I think it clicked. Listen, a lot of us spent too much time in our homes and you started looking at these things that you thought, well, why don't I actually wear that?
Yeah.
But I always grab for that. So I think that the best quality that is within your price range and the best tailoring, the best versatility, all of that, that's what people grab for.
What's the one thing every woman should have in her wardrobe?
I'm going to sound boring, but it should be an impeccable seasonless black pantsuit because you can go anywhere in that. You can split it apart. You can dress it up, dress it down, and it really has no time or day.
What about a man? What should he have?
That I actually think every man should have white jeans.
Oh.
White jeans.
Oh, great.
Because
white... I've never seen you in white jeans.
Oh, I do. Oh, I wear white
jeans. You wear them?
Oh, I do wear white jeans. Because white jeans can be everything from a black t-shirt to a navy blazer. And I love them in the winter.
Well, you had a fancy, a week-long fashion show in Palm Beach last year.
Yeah.
I was doing my CBD at a hotel in Palm Beach, and there you were with your new boutique there.
And I think I was wearing white jeans.
Oh, yeah, you know what? I think you were.
I think I was wearing white jeans.
I have to look back at my
photos. Look at your photos. I think I'm in white jeans.
What's your favorite color palette to work in?
Well, it is the color of my shopping bags, and I am addicted to camel.
Camel.
I like the idea that its fabrics and materials look very luscious and rich in it, but I like the classic side of it done in a non-classic way. I love sexy camel.
But, you know, I bought a white Michael Kors lace top, kind of a loose, pretty top with a collar. Lined in kind of a camel-y pink color.
Exactly.
I love
that. We call it
that.
Suntan.
Oh, it's suntan. Okay. Suntan. I love that top.
It's a fabulous
And then I bought it. Susan Magrino bought it. And about, I don't know how many other thousands of people bought it. I went to one party and four of us had that top on.
Oh, I love that. You're like the four tops. You're the four tops.
Yes.
You're the four tops, Martha.
We all had it on. And we all wore it with different bottoms, but it's such a great top.
But that's when we said the versatility.
Yeah.
It's four different people at the same event looking four different ways.
How does it feel to know that former First Lady Michelle Obama wore a dress designed by you for her first term official portrait?
Well, I had no idea that she was going to wear the dress for the portrait.
What color is it?
It was black. It was jersey. It was sleeveless. It was...
Sleeveless.
It was everything that we had never seen a first lady wear
That's
before.
That's right. Nobody ever bared their arms
and never
in
black,
a White House.
And never black. And jersey. And I suddenly, when I saw the photograph, I thought, wow, like we've entered modern times. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at how remarkable. And I could tell you she would be able to wear that dress 30 years from now. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, if you had a colorful suit on with big shoulder pads, that might not stand the test of time.
Yeah, I was a little shocked about the bare arms.
Now, at the time, it was, we had not seen
But she
that.
Wore bare arms a lot.
Often.
Because she had beautiful arms.
She had the right arms to bear,
exactly. Well, recently the New York Times reported the rise of crop tops in the office. Mm-hmm. What do you think about today's dress codes?
Can I tell you, I think this is unbelievably exciting what we're going through right now, that women feel more comfortable about their bodies and how they want to present themselves than ever before.
Well, why? Do you think they feel safer?
I don't know. I think it's sort of women have taken the power back because all of a sudden people realized for years, if you were bare, were you doing it for someone else's gaze?
Or just for yourself?
Now, all of a sudden, it's like, wait a minute. I'm not doing this for anyone but myself.
I look good. I feel good.
I look good. I looked in the mirror. I feel hot and I'm doing it. And if other people like it, great. If they don't, lump
it. But men are so terrified that they're not even looking.
Well, I think that, you know, the idea, I read the article. I thought the article was great. You know, I see that when we talk about what works at work, I think we've shifted... You know, the idea of what's too bare. Listen, we're in Midtown New York. I remember when people would never wear sandals or shorts.
Well, walk around Miami, everybody, and see what they're wearing down there. Basically, zero.
As little as possible.
Oh, boy.
So I think that it's reconditioning our heads. And if you're comfortable with a slice of skin, well, I think go for it. Absolutely.
Well, your name graces so many lovely products, from ready-to-wear clothing for women and men. You have footwear, accessories, eyewear, and fragrance. How do you ensure that your vision is carried out?
I'm going to say this to you.
Are you a terror?
I mean, you've got to be a nice control freak.
That's right.
That's the fact.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I am very opinionated and quick. So I make the decision and say, yay, nay, yes, go. Let's try this. Let's do this differently. Because you know what? My name's on it. I've got to believe in it.
Yep, and your name is on a lot of things all over the world.
It keeps me busy. That's for sure.
It certainly does.
Right, both of us.
But what do you do to relax? What do you do? I bet you do the same things I do. You like to eat? Do you like to eat?
I love great food. Yes. I love to travel. And I have to say, because I'm such an urban character, I like to get back to nature. So whether it's an unbelievable beach or we were talking about safari, where you just suddenly, you're in another world, right. Someone else's world, not your world. So I think that that's super important. I find even in New York, you know, just seeing the water and the green, you know, we were talking about green in New York City, how important it is. So I need to recharge. I literally will just shut it off, and it's sort of you're plugging the car in and you're recharging.
Where's the most extraordinary place you've visited in, say, the last 15 years?
Probably the place that, you know, other than Africa for safari, wonderful place called Kangaroo Island. It's in the southern coast of Australia. Unfortunately, they had a horrible fire. Mm. But this was just the abundance of nature was so remarkable. But then you had this incredible lodge that was architecturally magnificent. Because to me, it's sort of, I want nature and comfort. Yeah. I want the two together.
Well, that burned down is a tragedy. And I hope it can somehow be restored.
Restore that. The beauty to such a remarkable place.
And what about eating? What's your favorite kind of restaurants?
Well, I am hands down a fan of Italian, and more Italian food. I think there's, strangely, I think the Italians actually cook the way I design. I think they want the very best ingredients, and they try to keep things pretty simple, so you actually taste the ingredients. And so when I'm in Italy, I'm kind of knocked out by how great the food is.
Where in Milan do you eat?
Well, we do some of the classics. My grandmother's name was Beatrice, so in Italian, Beatrice is Bice. So I love the original Bice in Milan. It's just I love the room, I love the food. It's like being home for us. I love Da Giacomo for great fish in Milan. I just think again, great ingredients, you know, and they never. They never try too hard. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I think people try too hard.
Casual.
Yeah,
a little bit casual dining with good ingredients. Do you cook?
I think you and I think I've cooked with you on your show.
Oh, you remember.
I think I made meatballs with you, and I think I made my grandmother's pineapple cake with you. I am a terrible baker. I'm good at things that you don't have to be precise with the recipe.
Well, do you have a cook at home?
Yeah, we do.
Oh, that's good.
We do. I eat out a lot. Yeah. I have to say, we eat out a lot.
Well, back to fashion. If you look back, what era had the best fashion in your mind?
For me, the best fashion really would be the 60s and the 70s. I think they were eras that everything changed. I think when I look at photographs...
The Japanese? Did you like the Japanese fashion that we were wearing then?
That wasn't my favorite part of it, you know. But I when I look at, like, makeup in the 60s, remarkable. The hair, the makeup, everyone looked great.
That's when I was modeling in the 60s. Can you imagine?
But what an amazing change from the 50s, which was so buttoned up and so uptight. And suddenly, you know, we had a youth quake. And then the 70s, I think people discovered their bodies. You know, you really discovered what it was like to actually be able to move in your clothes instead of being in a girdle and a long line bra and all that.
Oh, those girdles.
Ooh, ridiculous.
They were hideous. I remember my mom getting into a girdle. Mm. And they wore them.
Regularly, every day.
Yeah, every day.
Every day.
Under the house dress, even.
No, every day.
They wore a girdle.
My grandmother was fully... encased.
She was corseted.
Every day. And she was a high school principal and she went to school dressed like that. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, I am very grateful that we have a more relaxed approach to fashion and a more relaxed approach to undergarments. I gave the award last night to Kim Kardashian and her Skims, which I must say are rather confining once you put them on.
But it's not your mom's girdle.
No, it's not your mom's girdle.
That's, you know.
They're easier to get on, but they are confining, you know.
I actually had a woman once years ago wearing a white dress of ours that was very fitted. And I said, "You look great in your dress." And she said, "I can't breathe." So I said, "Why not?" And she said, "Well, you don't know what's going on underneath this dress." I said, "Okay, it's your secret."
But do you like women's bodies nowadays? Do you like the thinness of so many women?
You know, I have to say, if you look at a Michael Kors fashion show, we really run the gamut. I mean, of different types of bodies, different ages. We have models in their 50s, models who are teenagers, petite, tall, size 16.
Yeah, you're more approachable.
I don't understand. I used to have this on Project Runway. Some of the designers, they would be like, "I don't design for people who are that size." I think it's a difficult thing to think that you're only designing for one body type.
Well, this touches on your love of food, but you really care about people who are hungry and who have not the ability to get their own food and sustenance. So you started Watch Hunger Stop?
Yes.
When did you start that?
Well, Watch Hunger Stop, I think we're at about 9 years ago. And it has been remarkable for us because what I saw here in New York City, back in the late 80s, I got involved with an organization called God's Love We Deliver.
And that's God's been such an amazing organization.
Through the pandemic, through the AIDS crisis, they are there here in New York. And it's really, you know, sometimes you feel overwhelmed that you can't make a difference. And here's something you and I, yes, certainly, we both love great food, but you see what it can do for someone, that someone's thinking about them and caring about them. So the United Nations, we realized that they were just the perfect partner for Watch Hunger Stop with the school meals program.
Yeah.
That we also...
And that's not just America.
No, this is outside of the States. This is around the world. And we see that not only, of course, you're bringing nutrition to these kids, but in a lot of these countries, the parents don't want to send often a girl to school. Mm-hmm. They want her to stay at home and work. But when there's a meal waiting for her, they send her to school. And, you know, everyone can, this is something that we can all help. You know, it's crazy, Martha, when we think here in the States or in the West, a cup of coffee in the morning is often $5. Well, $5, if you make $5 donation to the World Food Program for Watch Hunger Stops, that's an entire month
of food,
of meals at school for a child.
Yeah.
So we see the difference, you know, and it's kind of, we're talking about what's delicious. Well, it nourishes not only the body, but it nourishes the soul.
No, we are spoiled here in America, but there's a lot of hunger.
Oh,
in
we
America
have it next
too.
Door. We yes. have it. We have it here in New York. We have it everywhere.
We do. We have homeless. We have hunger. And that you're paying attention to these really dire problems is very admirable.
And we're all in it together. We're all connected.
Well, you and I are the tireless workers, Michael Kors, and I think that we will always be the tireless worker.
Absolutely.
And it's so nice to see you doing so well while you do so much good and dress us so beautifully.
Well, Martha,
I really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to come here and speak with us today.
Always great to talk
to you.
It's
so great. Thank you.
A pleasure.
Martha Stewart here. As a devoted pet parent and culinary expert, I ensure my cats and dogs are fed the finest nutrition. My premium pet food features air-dried protein inclusion, whole fruits and vegetables, and never any fillers. Martha Stewart pet food formulas make it so easy to satisfy the dietary needs and taste preferences of your pets. Now all six delicious formulas are 50% off. And there's convenient home delivery on Chewy.com. No more lugging heavy bags, and your pets will thrive on the optimal nutrition and great taste.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. And this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.